Hello, you Awakening Wonders. They're on Spotify, Apple, Stink Whistle, Gurgle Dot, or wherever you download your podcast these days to remain at least peripherally connected to some tendril of truth in a bewildering miasma of lies and propaganda. We appreciate you and we love you. You're part of our community. So that's why we're very happy to give you an audio version of our live Rumble show 5 days a week. It's on Monday to Friday. We decipher the latest news stories. We break down current topics that the mainstream media should be covering. And if they aren't, then we critique why they're not and what they are covering. Every week as well, right? We do brilliant conversations with people like Jordan Peterson, RFK, Tucker Carlson, Sam Harris, Vandana Shiva, Gabor Mate. These things are already up and you can listen to them now. So remember, this is an audio version of our daily live show. To tune in live, go to rumble.com/Russell Brand. You'll find it easily and I hope that you will love it. Now please enjoy this episode of Stay Free with Russell Brand. Thanks.
No, here's the fucking news.
Hello there, you Awakening Wonders. Thanks for joining me today for Stay Free with Russell Brand. Sorry that we're late. The dog ate my homework. I do apologise, guys. We are in it now, though, guys. Today is war, war, more war, funding wars, nuclear wars, wars. What is it good for? Well, evidently the military-industrial complex. We were talking about the Ben Shapiro, Tucker Carlson spat regarding the efficacy and necessity for nuclear war. And it's a topic we'll be returning to over the course of the week because we've got Colonel Douglas McGregor coming on the show later this week, as well as Dr. Niels, the writer of this book. So we've got some fantastic stuff coming up over the course of the week. In this show, we're also talking about the border crisis in your country and the corporations that lobby your government to essentially dilute the ability of ordinary Americans of all cultures, religions, and hues to negotiate for good wages. Is there a conspiracy at the border? This is a really fantastic piece. You'll really love it. And of course, we're talking about the global escalation of censorship. TikTok is now just a signature, one shaky, quaky old man signature away from being banned in the United States, as the TikTok ban was, of course, as you know by now, surely tacked onto the $95 billion war aid bill that's likely to be signed pretty soon. So wherever you are now, if you're watching us on YouTube, you've got to click the link in the description eventually, because we'll just be here for 15 minutes. I want to say hello to all you Awakened Wonders, like some patch patriot. All of you guys, did you enjoy the conversation with Colonel Douglas McGregor? That man is interested in freedom. Russell doesn't look right. Says 28 grams. What do you think it is? The hair? What do you think it is? The shirt? Hello, Limbic Beauty. Hello, all of you. Hello there, Circle Light, coming to London early in May and like to talk to me about Bible prophecy. We're also talking about the resurgence of Christianity and of course, Candice Owens' conversion to Catholicism, as well as touching on Bishop Murray Emanuel's forgiveness of the perpetuator of violence against him, the fella that stabbed him. And indeed, he believes that that footage should remain up on X. That's extraordinary. Whose moral universe are we living in now? If you want to become an Awakened Wonder, to get access to all of our content, to join us live for these interviews, to join us when we have our book club this month, we're talking about Mere Christianity by C.S. Lewis. We welcome you. And for 1 month only, if you use the phrase, well, it's the code, really, it's not a phrase, I surrender. You're not surrendering to some sort of dominator force, surrendering to the might that's already within you, allowing it to flow through. You get 1 month free. We'll post that link in the description now. And we shall raise a glass, or at least a crow farting mug, to the concept of freedom. Meanwhile, people are disappointed, it seems, on TripAdvisor, that when they went to Loch Ness, they didn't see a monster. We didn't see a monster. Don't go. It's a waste of time. I thought the whole experience was horrendous. I wish I hadn't bothered. It's just a tourist trap. I don't know why they would advertise the Loch Ness Monster when it's all a lie. Extraordinary. But maybe monsters are real. Maybe monsters are all around us. We'll be talking about the Trump case right away. In fact, we're going to talk about it immediately. Now, I asked you lot, is Trump being gagged because it's a criminal case and the law is the law, or because the judiciary is being used to stymie a political opponent? And there you go. The outcomes are pretty clear. Also, we used it as an opportunity to once again iterate that it's unlikely that impartiality is a possibility in a hysterical temperament like that prevails currently in your nation. Let's have a look at the legacy media's coverage of Trump being threatened with contempt of court.
Judge is now considering whether to hold Donald Trump in contempt of court.
Prosecutors at his criminal trial in New York say the former president violated orders to not talk about the case on social media. Fox's Caroline Elliott joins us live from the courthouse in New York with what happened in court today.
Prosecutors say that Trump violated this gag order with various social media posts, including attacks on key witnesses like Michael Cohen and Stormy Daniels. After the hearing today, Trump continued to post on Truth Social, saying the judge should recuse himself in this case.
We have a gag order, which to me is totally unconstitutional. I'm not allowed to talk, but people are allowed to talk about me. So they can talk about me, they can say whatever they want, they can lie, but I'm not allowed to say anything. I just have to sit back and look at why a conflicted judge has ordered me to have a gag order. I don't think anybody's ever seen anything like this.
I wonder if the case... if we can, in our minds, hold what this case is about. And in fact, you know, of course, it's commonly reported or at least understood that to a degree this case is a distraction. But how deep a distraction is it? How far away are we, the people of our various nations, we the people, to use a apt little phrase, from achieving the kind of freedom, achieving the kind of autonomy, achieving the ability to pursue happiness that we might believe we're entitled to? Now, from a spiritual perspective, of course, we'd have to ask, well, maybe we're not entitled to anything at all. What do you mean it's my life if it's not a life dedicated to service, if it's not a life dedicated to meaning? But let's just remember that this is what this case is ostensibly about. So the filing of false business reports portraying the money disbursed to Cohen, aforementioned, as payments for legal services was a misdemeanor, and the statute of limitations has long expired. D.A. Bragg, however, leveraged the misdemeanor into a felony by alleging that the false reports were an element of a conspiracy to violate federal law, even though no federal prosecutor has chosen to bring such a case. He charged each of the 34 false reports separately as a four-year felony with a combined maximum 20 years in prison upon conviction. So that's the actual facts of the matter. Is there anyone who believes that this is not about we want to deal with Trump using whatever means we have available to us? And is there anyone who believes that this is going to end in justice? Do you ever read Jay Krishnamurti, says Old Scratch 74? Yeah, Krishnamurti. Truth is a pathless land. The Tao, the way. Or as Galatians puts it, we must allow the self to die that Christ can be reborn in us. Yeah, I like Krishnamurti. I like Krishnamurti a great deal. There are a few more facts on this. As for the question of hush money, it's well known that Democratic President Bill Clinton offered to pay $700,000 to Paula Jones to settle her lawsuit over her allegations of improper behaviour. In that case, right-wing Republican lawyers induced Jones to refuse the money in order to engineer the perjury trap that led to Clinton's impeachment. In the current case, a Democratic district attorney is using equally underhanded methods. There's nothing progressive or democratic in such political cynicism, and that comes from a socialist news organisation, because ultimately they're interested in an entirely different model of reality. And I hope that that's what we're here for too. And it's going to be increasingly difficult to have these discussions because, believe me, the censorship industrial complex is real and it's on the rise. What's happening in Australia is extraordinary but not unprecedented. TikTok is on the precipice of being banned. Brazil are trying to boot X out. Rumble have already stopped streaming there, and indeed Rumble again remain at the vanguard and forefront of opposing this level of censorship. And you know already that the Trusted News Initiative, the organisation, an alliance of news organisations, in fact, from Australia, from the United Kingdom, from the United States, that includes tech giants like Google, have agreed that their real enemy is independent media. That means me and you, because independent media means independent minds and it means free speech. Our ability to communicate with one another, that we might discover that we have more in common than we have that divides us, particularly when it comes to this corrupted political class, this cycle of corruption, sending evidently aid money, out into the ether that the Pentagon can nary well track, that may not even make it to Ukraine or any other intended destination before once again becoming the donations that keeps the whole cycle moving. And if you want to understand that with a little more depth, then you'll join me for my conversation with Colonel Douglas McGregor that our Awaken Wonder community has already seen. Melania, I understand, is going to be selling some jewelry. Let's have a look at that.
And Melania Trump is taking heat from her former press secretary, Stephanie Grisham, who's blasting her for releasing a $245 Mother's Day necklace the week her husband's trial begins.
Seems like a good time in terms of marketing. Just in case we think that this judicial effort is indeed determined and designed to bring down Trump rather than to recognize were funds reappropriated incorrectly and was it wrong to pay that hush money, that, you know, let's have a look at what's happening to Bobby Kennedy. It seems that the Democrats don't want him on the ballot and are using sort of loopholes really to restrict his ability to stand. So, like, once again, Joe Biden won't debate anybody in primaries. The Democrat Party can't keep Bobby Kennedy within it. You're not allowed to vote for Donald Trump. You're not allowed to vote for Cornel West. You're not allowed, in fact, to vote for anybody except Joe Biden. And you have to call it democracy while you're doing it. So Bobby Kennedy survived the first legal challenge to his ballot access. Hawaii's state Democratic Party failed to meet its burden of proof to boot Kennedy's newly formed We the People Party from the ballot. In Hawaii, as in some other states, the signature threshold to get a new third party on the ballot is lower than for independent candidates. So they started a party and, you know, turns out they're allowed to do that. But look how bureaucracy is deployed to shut down opposition. The judiciary is deployed to shut down opposition. And remember, I don't believe that any individual other than from sacred, sublime spaces is going to change the world. I believe we require something a lot more significant than that, a lot more significant. And this is a time where we have to address and embrace the significance of what we're facing, because we are potentially on many fronts on the precipice of Armageddon. Even while we're told that what's happening is that your taxpayer dollars are funding Ukraine's war, it increasingly seems likely that there is military, explicit military involvement from US troops in the Ukraine-Russia conflict. Nearly 100 special forces from five Western countries, including more than a dozen Americans, have been operating on the ground in Ukraine, according to a leaked document. The file revealed the presence of at least 97 service members on the Ukrainian soil was part of a cache of documents marked secret, top secret. Don't look at these documents, is going to be problematic for us. Also, additionally, there are military advisors likely being sent to Ukraine. The US is considering increasing its small military presence in Ukraine by sending up to 60 additional military advisors, Politico reported on Saturday, the same day as the House approved $61 billion of spending on the proxy war. Did you see, in fact, the moment that Bill Keating gave Zelensky the good news about that money? Is all $95 billion going to him? I think it's 61, isn't it? Let's have a look at that sort of moment. It's sort of really sort of odd. And just bear in mind that in this moment, we know already this is an unwinnable war. You cannot win a war against Russia. They are a nuclear superpower. Their military is much more powerful than was first assumed. There's no question that they have been provoked into this conflict. There's no reason for the United Kingdom and for the United States to be involved unless there is a project to destabilize Russia in order to create a unipolar world where American establishment interests are represented, initially supported by taxpayer money, before ultimately becoming the globalist project that it's always been designed to be. But let's have a look at Bill Keating sort of giving Zelensky your tax dollars as if he's sort of giving him an anniversary card.
Hello, sir. Bill Keating from Massachusetts. Good to see you. And I have something that you're really going to like.
Yeah.
Come on, this is the official tally of the vote.
Yes, I see.
For the supplemental aid.
Yes.
And look at that vote. 73%.
Yes. Thank you so much. 73.
That's a good vote.
Good. Very good. Thank you very much.
It's sort of like Bill Keating wanted to be thanked or felated for that, didn't he? He's like really had expectations. You know when you give someone a gift or something, maybe when you arrive at someone's house with some flowers and like they don't take it for too long. Like, you know, oh, hiya. And you don't know whether to take your shoes off. And oh, am I going to take my shoes off? Is it a shoes off house? Like Bill Keating, like Zelensky though, who at this point, let's face it, is held up and supported by deep state, special forces interests, you know, operating in a country that doesn't have elections, in a country that shut down its media. I'm not attacking Ukrainian people. I'm not attacking Ukrainian people. What would be the point? Who is benefiting from this situation? Well, tell me, you guys, if it's true that there's been like that Zelensky's been acquiring properties. Can someone send me a link on that? It's pretty extraordinary. It's pretty extraordinary. Anyway, Thomas Massey, he's not down with all of the literal flag waving in Congress and the Senate at the passing of these bills. But it seems that it's not something he's legitimately allowed to complain about. Let's have a look. Massey posted on Tuesday that he was called up by the House Sergeant at Arms, who allegedly threatened the representative with a $500 fine. Think of some of the lobbying money that's spent, some of the donations, $500 fine if he did not delete a post with a video from the House floor when Democratic congressmen waved Ukraine flags after a chamber voted to pass this foreign aid package. Excuse me, that includes funding for the European nation. Let's have a excuse me, let's have a look at his tweet. I've got some terrible COVID. You'll have to excuse me. Instead of fining Democrats for waving flags, the House Sergeant at Arms just called and said, "I'll be fined $500 if I don't delete this post." So, there you go. Coming up later in the show. Coming up. excuse me. Come a bit more, guys. Excuse me. Sorry, I need some content. Thank you. Yeah, we got some brilliant content. If you're watching us on YouTube, we're only going to be there for a couple of minutes. Then when we come back on Rumble, we're going to be talking about the TikTok ban bill. We're going to be talking about Elon Musk's travails in Australia. Also, we're going to be talking about Shapiro and Tucker. So we're going to leave you if you're watching us on YouTube right now. You have to click the link in the description. So start the countdown. Thank you to join us. Sorry, I've got... I need some sort of... Is there an injection available for this? Anything. No, but at least stop transmission. But I'd need to know that it's been trialed effectively. And I want to know if there's any side effects. Before I take anything, I know I'll take it anyway. So listen, we're going to be talking about Tucker and Shapiro spat. We're going to be talking about the TikTok ban. And we're going to be talking about Elon and Australia and the censorship industrial conflicts, as well as Candace's Catholicism. Click the link in the description. See you in a second. I need a video, guys, because I'm coughing a lot. So can you find something to see? Let's have a look at the Senate passing the TikTok bill.
TikTok could be running out of time after the Senate passed legislation tonight that would require the app's Chinese parent company, ByteDance, to sell its stake in the platform within a year or face a national ban. Both Democrat and Republican leaders say they're concerned about the Chinese government accessing the sensitive data of the app's millions of American users and its potential ability to manipulate content. TikTok has denied sharing data with the Chinese government and said in a statement the bill would devastate 7 million businesses and trample the free speech rights of 170 million Americans.
There you go, thin end of the wedge. I imagine there'll be further social media bans and attempts to censor. Let's have a look at a fantastic commercial from one of our partners. It's Rumble's own in-house coffee, Freedom Coffee. Have a look, we'll be back in a second.
Hey, this is exciting. We've got a great partner today. It's Rumble. But beyond Rumble, it's Rumble's latest venture. Let me ask you first, are you a Sleepy Joe type character with zero cognitive performance, struggling to muster focus and brain power for basic things like running the United States of America? You got to stop drinking woke liberal coffee that hates you and your way of life and start your day by drinking Rumble's very own 1775 coffee. This is going to be the best tasting coffee you've ever had. seriously good, ethically sourced from a family farm in the high altitude mountains of Bolivia. Not in the Bolivian lowlands run not by a family, but by a single man still living with a pet. No! Instead of waking up and drinking your big corporation-owned woke ideology coffee that's probably making you sick from the pesticides it's sprayed with, try Rumbles 1775 Revolutionary Coffee. Support freedom of speech. Build a parallel economy that actually values you and loves you. My favourite? It's dark, of course. I've always found the lure of the dark irresistible. I'm sorry, how can I stay mad at you? Well, you're just going to have to wait over there for a little while. Level up your morning routine with a 1775 coffee. Sleep all night knowing your hard-earned dollary dues are going towards supporting freedom-loving creators like me on Rumble. Visit 1775coffee.com now. Pick up your first bag. Use the code BRAND to save 10% on your first order. Oh, come on. Why choose, you know? Okay, back to the content.
Hello there. Just so as I can stave off this, I want to bring you this fantastic and intriguing story. For a long time, we've been talking about the chaos at the border. But have you considered how the corporations that, through donations, control your Congress, control your Senate, are benefiting from migration and creating despair and poverty among ordinary Americans through their lobbying? You know that $95 billion dollars of military aid for Ukraine, Israel and Taiwan has just been passed, and the migration crisis is escalating significantly. Immigration policy is being shaped to lower wage growth. So now we take a moment to look at who's benefiting from the migrant crisis and the causes of it. So here's the news. No, here's the effing news.
Thank you for choosing Fox News. Here's the news. No, here's the fucking news.
Your taxes are paying for two current wars and one potential future war. Meanwhile, the southern border is in chaos and migrants flood America. Who benefits then on excessive availability of cheap labor? Rather than focusing on migrants themselves, let's focus on who's benefiting from an open border while your resources are spent on war. Congress has just granted $95 billion of aid to Ukraine, Israel, and Taiwan, curiously, in order to ensure that those nations are able to support interests that apparently, evidently, and obviously align with the US establishment's agenda. But do they align with your agenda? And do you remember being asked about these issues? Because all the while, your taxes are being spent on funding foreign military adventures of a variety of hues, the southern border crisis continues, with hundreds of thousands of people from Latin America primarily making it into your nation. And why is it that this crisis is framed in a very particular way? Why is it that there is not more expenditure on securing the border? And who benefits from this migration crisis continuing? Could it be possible that some of the largest brands in America, some of the most recognizable names in American corporate life, benefit from crushing your ability to earn fair wages from your work by flooding the market with cheaply available labor? And what amount of lobbying goes on to ensure that the border crisis goes unaddressed, that wars continue, and that you pay high taxes and yet remain poor and potentially unable to negotiate for better wages? So who's causing the wars? Who's causing the border crisis? And why are ordinary Americans being punished for both? Firstly, let's look at Congress passing a new $95 billion aid package that ultimately will be used to perpetuate unwinnable wars.
The bill is passed.
And that's that. We didn't need to ask you or anybody else. The bill is passed. Just so sort of confident. Like, who actually wants this bill passed? Do you reckon if they did a referendum of everyone in America, it would pass? I don't think so.
After months of delays in GOP infighting, the U.S. House voting Saturday to provide $95 billion to allies abroad, a major win for the White House and Speaker Mike Johnson. In a rare move, Democrats crossing the aisle to help Republicans clear a series of foreign assistance bills.
Oh, hey, peace and harmony around the world. Democrats and Republicans skipping through the fields hand in hand,
while ordinary people are funding all of this stuff, and it's likely that they voted not with their consciences, but with their pockets.
The package would provide 60 $61 billion to help Ukraine fight Russia, $26 billion for Israel just days after Iran attacked the Jewish nation, and $8 billion for the Indo-Pacific, where the rise of China has national security experts worried. A fourth bill bans TikTok if its Chinese owner doesn't divest.
We've also... Okay, so keep that war going with Russia. Oh, good. Okay, continue action in the Middle East that looks like it's going to lead to Armageddon. Okay, good. And start a war with China, potentially, because they're not allowed their own country and agenda. Also, though, get rid of TikTok. What? What is this bill? The do what you want bill? Also, Mike Johnson gets to parade around in a glittery wheelbarrow and gets sprinkled with stimulants and drugs.
And changes some foreign assistance into a loan, an idea first floated by former President Donald Trump.
On one hand, $95 billion of additional aid derived from your taxes heading out of the United States of America. Who's heading in to the United States of America?
Today, the border crisis was dumped on Southern California's doorstep at the hands of the federal government. Border Patrol mass-released hundreds of illegal immigrants to San Diego streets as bus after bus arrived at a local transit station, releasing masses of men and women from around the globe.
Men and women, weird sort of categories and stuff. Now, just so you know, I'm sympathetic to people that are struggling around the world, likely in part because of the imperialist behaviors of countries like yours and countries like mine. And it's not us, is it? It's corporatist globalist projects that destabilizing the world. But at some point, we have to focus on what is the impact of this migration on ordinary Americans, many of whom might have been a generation or two back from Venezuela or Mexico or Guatemala or wherever. Who's benefiting not only from this influx of migrant labor, but from the ongoing vilification of the migrants themselves, rather than the very powerful forces that are benefiting?
Who had crossed the California border illegally, and they plan to travel to blue cities across America.
¿Dónde vas en los Estados Unidos?
Nueva York.
New York. Going to New York.
Atlanta.
Atlanta.
New Jersey.
New Jersey.
Chicago.
Chicago.
And New York.
New York.
Sort of like the draft, in a way, but it's a migrant draft. I'm going to the Buffalo Bills. Dolphins. Good luck in Florida.
After release, nonprofit volunteers helped direct the migrants to private buses that took them to the airport and other transit stations. Some decided not to wait and crammed into taxis. Most told us they're here to work.
Okay, so who benefits from cheaply available labor? Well, I suppose it could be giant corporations that are always telling you how American they are and how much they love America and American people. No, that would be really hypocritical.
All right, Meat Giant Tyson laying off 1,200 workers after closing its pork factory in Perry, Iowa, only later to announce 52,000 jobs for migrants.
We could sack Americans who are expensive and employ poor people from around the world because we care about them. That's why this certainly isn't about our bottom line. Let's look at how very powerful interests benefit from migration and therefore from the border not being correctly policed or patrolled. And perhaps this is why your tax dollars are being spent on foreign wars rather than domestic solutions that might be beneficial for ordinary Americans. A record surge of illegal border crossings in recent years has fueled the debate over immigration and border security, emerging as a key voter concern ahead of the US presidential election in November. And this is some reporting by Li Fang. When the meatpacking giant Tyson Foods announced plans last month to shutter its pork plant in Perry, Iowa, and lay off all 1,200 employees, it brought rare attention to one of the most influential, less scrutinized dynamics of America's mass migration debate. That is, the role played by large politically connected corporations seeking to blunt wage growth. It's interesting that this is a dynamic that's not often scrutinized. Who benefits from no one scrutinizing this dynamic? I.e., who benefits from migration? Of course, we're all focusing on the migrants themselves. Yeah, they're coming over here getting our jobs.
They took our jobs! Yeah, they're down!
But why is this issue not being addressed differently? For this isn't a time of crisis for Tyson. The same day the company made the announcement, Bloomberg News quoted Garrett Dolan, an executive, as saying that the firm had been actively recruiting from the waves of migrants who have ended up in cities such as New York seeking asylum. Tyson Foods, which already employs some 42,000 immigrants, which seems like a very high number, I hope they ain't got the stars and stripes anywhere on their packaging, said it had placed some of the migrants to work at its plants in Tennessee. We would like to employ another 42,000 if we could find them, Dolan said. The dual headlines caused a storm on social media, with many calling for a boycott over claims that the company was replacing Americans with
immigrants who would work for less. Replacement theory? No, 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 that's very controversial. But they are replacing Americans with migrants. That can't be a replacement theory, can it? Ohio Senator J.D. Vance described the company's actions as the decimation of the American dream. Tyson Foods is far from alone in acting in this way. Many corporations have called for increased immigration as a solution for rapidly rising wages. And several business groups are also pressing policymakers to support programs to extend legal protections to those who entered the country without documentation. Any pro-immigration policies that would be implemented will benefit us on increasing the availability of labor throughout the country, said Andrew Masterman, the former head of Brightview, the nation's largest commercial landscaping company, when pressed by investors 2 years ago on how he would respond to upward wage inflation. I suppose if there is cheaply available labor, then how are ordinary Americans that work in blue-collar or working-class fields able to negotiate for higher wages? It's just simply supply and demand. And that's whether that's immigrant labor that exists in the country or whether it's guest immigrant labor coming in, he added, according to a transcript of his remarks. We're fans of that.
This week's special guest, migrant labor. It's these guys who have been themselves displaced by the interests of globalist capitalists.
Hello, hello, we're coming here to work. It's like a game show, but that game is your life.
In 2022, Scott Salmiers, the president of ABM Industries, a nationwide building maintenance and janitorial firm, raised similar concerns on an earning call. The labor pressures we are currently experiencing are largely unprecedented, said Salmiers. He cited reduced immigration, historically low unemployment, and sudden demand from an economy in rebound for raising wages. It's a direct result of the pandemic. The closure of the border and reduction in foreign worker visas has led to a tight labor market and the most rapid wage increases seen in a generation, particularly among the low paid. The current numbers at the border, therefore, while a political nightmare, pose an economic opportunity to business interests, and corporate interests have not sat idly by. They've started marshalling their resources to lobby Washington for change, especially on immigration policy. Wow, so corporate interests are actively lobbying for a change in migration policy. This brings to the forefront an important principle. Circumstances that may be pejorative and terrible for you, punitive and punishing, might be beneficial to powerful elites. For example, during lockdown, many people in low-paid jobs were suffering, and yet billionaires saw a massive increase in wealth. We don't live in the same world, so the fact that we have the same government seems a bit odd. And who do those governments work for? Is it ordinary people, or is it to advance the interests of these powerful establishment elites? Why don't you let me know in the chat and the comments?
The Business Roundtable and the US Chamber of Commerce, the influential lobby groups that helped mobilize support for the 2017 Trump corporate tax cuts, have turned to immigration reform to confront labor market dynamics. In meetings with Congress, the BRT has promoted its agenda of increased agricultural worker visas and temporary protected status, TPS programs, the latter of which grants certain asylum-seeking migrants the legal right to work in the United States. The chamber, meanwhile, backs the legislation, known as H.R. 16, which gives long-term recipients of TPS the ability to obtain permanent resident status. It's odd that the same lobby group that helped Trump get some tax loophole stuff passed are now working on getting migrant visas more easily obtainable. It makes you wonder where these elite interests actually lie. Do they care about patriotism and MAGA and stuff like that? Or are there a set of corporate interests that sort of migrate all over Washington and all over the corporate map as the actual parasites, the actual aliens, the actual dominant force hovering above your life, parasitically and vampirically hoovering up your resources? While many refugees and asylum seekers are fleeing genuine disasters and oppression, others are seeking better jobs, a dynamic welcomed by major employers, especially those in agriculture, food services, slaughterhouses, janitorial work, construction, and landscaping. BRT, that's the Business Roundtable, represents the chief executives of the largest businesses in America. And its board includes many firms reliant on low-wage labor, including McDonald's, PepsiCo, Walmart, and Yum brands. It's weird, isn't it? These are brands that we've all heard of. It's not like sort of obscure stuff. I hadn't really heard of Tyson Foods, but McDonald's, Pepsi, these are sort of all-American brands, aren't they? They're sort of a part of every parade and part of every Olympics and very much pride themselves on their connection to America. And what is America other than the American people? Well, it looks like they are actively seeking opportunities to
to undermine American workers in the labor force before we even get into the nutritional benefits of their products when it comes to the crunch time. And you won't be crunching out because your teeth will be rotting and your gastric system will be being annihilated. Donnie King, the CEO of Tyson Foods, is also a member. This is too much like Don King and Mike Tyson. It's a confusing story. Tyson Foods are having a fight with Evander Holyfield Foods, but they bit a little bit of their ear off and it ended up in a sausage. You can finish that. Meanwhile, Suzanne Clark, the president of the chamber, has cited wage growth as a top concern for her business members and has previously called for a doubling of the rate of legal immigration. Business lobbyists were quick to hail President Biden's decision last year to extend TPS protections for over 470,000 Venezuelan migrants. And the administration has since announced an extension for programs granted to nationals of El Salvador, Honduras, Nepal, and Nicaragua. They're always like pretending, we gotta help these immigrants. These poor guys, it's a shame. You know that Trump wanted to put them babies in some cages? Didn't Obama build those cages? Yeah, but Trump wanted to build a wall. But aren't you still building that wall? Look, shut up. We need cheap labor for McDonald's and Mike Tyson and Evander Holyfield Foods, as well as PepsiCo. And we also would like to feel very kind while we're benefiting from that. God bless McAmerica.
Business groups with a financial stake in immigration policy are also deeply entwined with the pro-immigration activists base. The National Immigration Forum and the League of United Latin American Citizens, LULAC, are prominent examples of this relationship. Tyson Foods was among the sponsors of LULAC's February legislative conference, which focused partly on the need to pass greater immigration protections to migrants. The event featured recorded messages from several Democratic lawmakers and a speech from Health and Human Services Secretary Xavier Becerra. The National Immigration Forum, which has organized coalition efforts to expand TPS programs and other immigration reform, similarly received financial support last year from Amazon, Tyson Foods, Walmart, the BLT, the Chamber, and Marek, a construction firm. Some pretty powerful American corporations here. Amazon, Walmart. I don't reckon, I know in fact, from the way that Amazon treat their workers across the world, that their primary concern is not, are immigrants all right? What their primary concern is, can we pay people the minimum amount possible without it being seen as so disgusting that our business model is affected? That seems to be the way that these things operate. Tyson Foods in-house lobbyist, Nora Venegas, is also active in several immigration reform groups.
Hey, we got a lovely partner today. It's our friends at Hallo. Hallo is the number one prayer app in the world. I use it. You can explore Christianity with over 10,000 prayers, meditations, and music. And as Lent continues, what better way to deepen your connection to the loving Lord Christ? It's been downloaded 4 million times in 150 countries, be like Calm or Headspace, but for Christians. Hallo helps you pray and meditate and sleep better. It's helped me build a daily routine of habit and prayer. I do the rosary. I know it off by heart, except the end bit. I've got to learn that. You can pray alongside Mark Wahlberg, Jim Caviezel. He was Jesus. Jonathan Rumi. He was Jesus in The Chosen. You can choose your own Jesus, what version of Christianity do you want. And you know Jonathan Rumi was my body double in Ballers. Jesus was my body double. Download it today. Reclaim your rightful peace and grow closer to God. Go to hallo.com/brand to try the Hallo prayer app. You will love it. Okay, let's get back to the content.
Tyson Foods supports bipartisan immigration policy solutions. It's trying to make that like it's all friendly. What it's saying is, we don't care which party is in power, as long as the party that is in power supports us and not American people. And we have massive plans to employ the world's poorest people and keep them poor. And should they be able to stay in America through changing their visas, then they'll become the generation that we'll be shafting next year, the next generation, with migrants from some other place that we've torn up in a war or by exploiting their resources. Do you see that we have more in common with one another, no matter where we're from in the world, than we do with this set of interests that manipulate behind the scenes law, legislation, migration status, leaving borders open, putting warfare aid over here, all the while telling us we're doing this for kindness? Why are you in that war in Ukraine? Kindness, Israel? Kindness? Why are you letting all these migrants in? Kindness? Bloody hell, you're so kind, we're probably all going to be dead soon.
Tyson Foods supports bipartisan immigration policy solutions, said Vega at a press conference with other immigration reform leaders in 2021. Look at all the language here, bipartisan leaders. These are all just a bunch of people exploiting ordinary Americans and trying to pretend it's kindness. Whether our team members came as refugees or temporary protected status TPS holders, we support policy solutions to provide them stability, she added. It's about their stability.
mobility. Just don't worry about Tyson Foods and our profits and the fact that we sacked a load of American workers and then employed a load of migrants. Are these migrants stable? Well, no, because there's a bunch of wars and exploitative activity and coups and CIA deep state activity going on in their country. They're not stable, but also, though, they are willing to work for pennies on the dollar, so let's just keep that little wheel turning, shall we? Meanwhile, Tent Partnership for Refugees, a new group connecting migrants with employers, has formed alliances with dozens of employers around the world, including Brightview, Amazon, and Walmart. And they'll be patting themselves on the back for this. We've got this new initiative. We're helping migrants from pretty war-torn nations. Not only do they want the profit, they want you to love them as well. Tyson Foods, in a Tent press release, announced it would hire 2,500 refugees. Brilliant. This is sort of a bit like Schindler's List, but with Schindler sort of making a load of money out of it and then not letting anyone go. The Tyson Foods scandal eventually blew out. The company said its executive misspoke and denied any wrongdoing, while parts of the press downplayed the issue. It's not really news that Tyson hires many immigrant workers, scoffed the Washington Post fact-checker Glenn Kessler. Salon claimed those voicing concerns about corporations replacing Americans with foreign workers were spinning a narrative akin to a racist conspiracy. Like, what? You got a theory that we're replacing Americans with migrants? I don't think so. Also, Americans, that term should include Muslim, black, gay, Americans of all colors and hues and cultural persuasion being replaced with cheaper labor. They'd like to divide it up and, hey, you're supporting white Americans, you MAGA lunatic, against these beautiful, brown, easily affordable migrants and want us to believe that they're there helping them. How long are you going to continue to participate in that game? Tyson Foods also moved to counter its critics. The company released a statement to Fox News clearing up misinformation about its hiring practices. Any insinuation that we would cut American jobs to hire immigrant workers is completely false, even though we actually did that. This is misinformation. Just because we did replace a lot of American workers with migrant workers, you can't say we did that, or it's misinformation. And in fact, you're the racist, huh? Not us at Tyson Foods. No wonder they have to create these categories of discussing stuff makes you racist, because that's the only way they can stop you discussing stuff. Isn't that the most perfect example of misinformation, or I think it's actually malinformation? Something that's true, but they'd prefer you didn't say. But you did sack a load of American workers and then replace them with migrants. Yeah, but that doesn't make us look very good, so it's illegal for you to say that. Oh. While it's true that the company's reported recruitment efforts are centered on those with legal authorization to work, such as TPS holders, many did not enter the country legally. So they were, at some point, illegal immigrants. And many of the refugees who entered the country without documentation later gained legal status through the focused activism of business-funded immigration advocacy groups and business lobbying from interests such as Tyson Foods. The company is far from a bystander in the process. Just because we've been lobbying to change these laws and then these laws changed and then we benefited from the change in those laws, you think we're somehow involved. That's misinformation. And also, just to make clear, I'm nothing to do with Mike Tyson. And here's my colleague Donnie King.
That's true. He's nothing to do with it.
A lot of the anti-Trump rhetoric is, this racist son of a bitch, Trump, he won't let any migrants into the country. But we, the Democrats, will do that because we are God-fearing humanitarians who love human beings and people. But then you find out that the Democrats are being lobbied by some of the richest, most powerful corporations to let migrants into the company to lower the wages for their corporation. You yourself have to ask yourself this question. Do you think the Democrats are allowing the border crisis to continue because, as they say, they love human beings and they want to help human beings? Or do you think it's somehow connected to all this lobbying money that's being spent on getting them to change legislation in order to lower wages? So are they doing it because they love human beings, or are they doing it because they love money? And if it is because they love human beings, maybe they'll pass a bunch of laws banning lobbying and not accept any lobbying money from BRT. That will show us for sure, wouldn't it? But as long as they continue to accept that lobbying money, at least part of it, I'm sure it's most, you know, they love human beings and the poorer the better and all that. They're certainly trying to make your country poorer and my country poorer and people all over the world poorer. It seems to be a big part of their deal at the moment. You will own nothing and you will be happy. Huh, where did I hear that? But you have to at least consider that the lobbying might be a part of it. Don't you? I mean, I'm certainly considering it. And these vested interests are just one part of what constitutes a persistent oversight and discussion of mass migration. The role of the business lobby in shaping both migration law and the policies that some argue continue to attract those making the journey illegally. As is so often the case, the net result is the relegation of the lowest rungs of America's working class to an afterthought, crushed beneath the imperatives of America's biggest corporations. Sounded somewhat resonant, that, didn't it? Because when you look at the gala and carnival of American political life, the perpetuation of wars that cost tax dollars, the denigration of ordinary Americans, the influx of cheap labor, you have to ask, do I, knowing what I know about these people and these institutions and their practices and their susceptibility to lobbying and where they get their donations from and how they spend their money and how they censor information online and how they want to crush dissent, do I think that their interests are helping people or enriching themselves and ensuring that ordinary people have no power, even if that's they don't even have the power to nourish themselves or think straight or unify with people of all cultures and colors and religions to oppose this establishment narrative? I'm beginning to think that the Democrats leave the border open and fund foreign wars because they want you poor and unable to compete in the job market. They want you to own nothing and be happy. Pretty catchy slogan. But that's just what I think. Why don't you let me know what you think in the comments in the chat? Remember, we do an exclusive video every week that you can see, as well as joining us for interviews with brilliant guests and meditating and learning about spirituality. It's a pretty good offering at a pretty important time. More important than any of that, if you can, please stay free.
Many switching. Switch on, switch off, many switching, switch on, switch off.
Hello, we're back, huh? Good to see you guys. Thank you. My throat is okay. My larynx is back. And we've got so much more to talk about. Because you can see that when there are unpopular governments making unpopular decisions, the necessity for censorship and incredible control becomes absolutely paramount, and that is the world we are living in. The situation in Australia that we covered to some degree yesterday is escalating yet further. What I find peculiar, indicative, and thought-provoking is that it somewhat centres on the extraordinary stabbing of Bishop Marmari Emmanuel, who remarkably, immediately forgave his assailant, and interestingly believes that the video of his attack, which of course took place in a church in Sydney, should remain on X. Now, this is what the Australian government are arguing is the type of content that ought be brought down. What do you think about that? Even acts of violence. The internet's been around a while now. We've seen appalling things. You know what I've never seen? I've never seen any of these sort of executions and the beheadings and those kind of things that we all know are available online, because I don't want to look at that. I find the world dark enough and disturbing enough without seeking that out. In the same way that I don't look at anymore for some time, thank you, Heavenly Father, pornography, because I don't need the influx of that kind of information. It's not a moral judgment on you or participants in that industry, I suppose is what it is, but I don't need to seek that stuff out. What I also believe is that people within certain obvious lines defined by consent have the right to look at the kind of content they want to look at. That your individual sovereignty, your ability to choose for yourself is what's significant. Now, Rumble's CEO, Chris Pavlovsky, and Elon Musk are again posting on Musk's platform regarding this subject. So Pavlovsky says, what we're seeing in Australia and New Zealand is coming to Canada if we do not speak up. They're, of course, native Canadians, the guys that started Rumble. The Australian government now believes it has worldwide jurisdiction to censor content, because they're saying, in order to avoid the possibility of VPNs being deployed, those of you who saw my conversation with Schellenberger yesterday will know that's something that he brought up. And Michael Schellenberger was talking about VPNs like they came from another dimension. There are these things, VPNs. Joining Free Matt Kim today to discuss how governments are coming after our human rights. We've got to get Pavlovsky on this show. We've got to get Musk on this show. We've got to have a censorship industrial complex conversation where we get some of the opposition to this censorship speaking together. Because in Brazil, they're making massive moves. In the United Kingdom, online censorship bills were being passed at the exact moment that I was being attacked, curiously, incidentally. Just want to let you know that by some of the key organisations, I mean government departments and government-funded NGOs that are particularly interested in censorship of, say, dissenting voices. So this is a global problem that requires a global response. Indeed, precisely what we learned in the pandemic. Of course, a pandemic by its nature encompasses the globe. That's literally what a pandemic means. But what we saw in terms of regulation, legislation, medication, pharmacological support, wealth transfer, exploitation of people, closing down of free speech, surveillance and censorship was an indication of a broader climate. So what's happening in Australia right now is extraordinary. And the way that the way that the invective and attacks are escalating is significant. Have a look at this. This is an Australian senator called Jackie Lambie talking about, I think she actually says, I can't believe this is true, that Elon Musk should be jailed for allowing free speech. Let's have a look at this. Let me know what you think, guys.
Elon Musk has no social conscience or conscience whatsoever. I don't know, whatever Elon...
He has no social conscience. He has no conscience whatever. Well, he's got to have some sort of mental activity because he keeps inventing things.
Elon Musk is on. It says that that's okay to continue to air that is absolutely disgusting behaviour. And quite frankly, the...
Which, she goes, says, she's off her rocker. She's off her rocker, mate. It's kind of the kind of language that she would respond to.
Bloke should be jailed. And the sooner that we can bring rules in or do something about this sort of game playing with our social media, the better off we're going to be. But quite frankly, the power that that man has because of that platform that he's on, it's got to stop. It has absolutely got to stop.
Break in just now, literally just now. You guys may have seen it. Have you seen it? TikTok is banned now. Biden has banned TikTok. So in Australia, they're trying to shut down X. In Brazil, they're trying to shut down X. Rumble has left Brazil already, and Biden has just signed a bill to ban TikTok. Is it because of the ability for the Chinese to, I don't know, interfere in elections or to protect children or whatever they're claiming currently? Or is it simply because TikTok became a platform where anti-war videos were being prevalently exchanged and we've got an election? So is TikTok being banned to protect you or to protect the US government and Biden? So she could say, if you think it's to protect you, press Y. If you think it's to protect Biden, B. Let me know in the chat now. Astonishing and staggeringly, one thing we can be optimistic about is the rise of interest in religion and Christianity. Now, David Icke did an interesting post, and I'll let you know, I really like David Icke, as a matter of fact. But he's curious about Candace Owens converting to Christianity. Loads of you in the Awaken Wonder chat. Yep, it's to protect Biden. Of course it's to protect Biden. Of course it's to protect Biden. Of course it is. He's also commented on my interest in Christianity, my chanting of the Holy Rosary. And you know, again, like David Icke's a person I really want to talk to. I think he's done and said some incredible things. And I think the reason he's censored is because he's saying stuff that powerful people don't want said. But on this issue, I have a different perspective. The rise of spirituality is encouraging. The rise and resurgence of interest in Christianity is encouraging because it's one way out of this materialistic prison that's being created for us and whose walls are being daily fortified, as we're seeing in Australia, Brazil, Canada, Ireland through the hate laws, my country, what's been going on here. There's that Bishop Mari Emanuel, who I pray, Heavenly Father, that we can get him on the show, has said himself that he wants the content to remain up. Now, remember during the pandemic period, how exactly Australia behaved, what their stance was, the positions that they took. Let's have a look at some of that. Look at, like, no jab, no transplant. Remember that crazy stuff? Pretty astonishing. And let's have a look at Anthony Albanese's final post. I'm checking out of X. This will be my final post on X. I stand firm in my belief that free speech is a dangerous tool and must be restricted. Free speech is a dangerous tool and must be... That's not good. That's the Prime Minister. Elon Musk's commitment to free speech is a detriment to our... Oh my God! This is mental! He's the elected leader of a nation. What do you see? Do you guys... It's not just me, is it? Do you see how crazy this is? Elon Musk's commitment to free speech is a detriment, that doesn't even make sense, is to the detriment of our democratic discourse. How can you have democratic discourse without free speech? As such, in solidarity with Senator Lambie, I too shall be quitting X. Oh my God. Oh my God, it's happening. It's actually happening. This is time for us to rise up. Elsewhere, let me know what you think about the censorship industrial complex. Let me know what you think about this issue. Let me know if you think, like I do, that a return to faith, a resurgent spirituality, an alliance among distinct dominions or denominations of faith is going to be necessary. Man, you lot are funny in there. Okay, now let's spend a little bit of time talking about the ongoing Tucker Carlson, Ben Shapiro. Is it a conflict? I mean, not compared to a nuclear war, it's a storm in a teacup compared to that. But Tucker on Joe Rogan made some remarks about the use of the atomic bomb. Let's have a look at that first of all to kick us off.
Well, you could say the same about the atomic bomb, right?
Yes, you could.
And you could say that we have to develop it like Oppenheimer felt before the Nazis did.
I love that. How'd that work? How'd that work?
Well,
I love, by the way, that people on my side, I'll just admit it, on the right, you know, have spent the last 80 years defending dropping nuclear weapons on civilians. Like, are you joking?
Right.
That's just like prima facie evil.
Yeah.
If you can't, well, if we hadn't done that, then this, that, the other thing, that was actually a great savings life. No, it's wrong to drop nuclear weapons on people. And if you find yourself arguing that it's a good thing to drop nuclear weapons on people, then you are evil. Like, it's not a tough one, right? Is that a hard call for you? It's not a hard call for me. So with that in mind, like, why would you want nuclear weapons? It's like just a mindless, childish sort of intellectual exercise to justify, like, oh no, it's really good because someone else will get it. How about no? How about like spending all of your effort to prevent this from happening? Would you kill baby Hitler, you know, famously?
Right.
So I don't know why we're sitting back and allowing this to happen if we really believe it will extinguish the human.
Baby Hitler hadn't actually done anything wrong, so it's out of order, really. How would you explain it? What are you doing to that baby? Well, no, now, come on. Like, people will start using that as an excuse to kill other babies. Okay, so the way Tucker Carlson puts it, pretty difficult to disagree with that, isn't it? There's no one here thinking it's a good idea to drop nuclear bombs, is it? Does anyone think it's a good idea in the Rumble chat? I'd kill Hitler's mum. She was all right. She was just trying her best. He's a good lad, my Adolf. He will be okay. Let's have a look at what Ben Shapiro's saying. I guess he responded to Tucker's, in my view, pretty reasonable claim that nuclear bombs are, like, I guess what they continually say, I suppose, and I've not seen Ben's take yet, is that without the nuclear war, there would have been a greater loss of life. But let's unpack that a little.
When it comes to isolationism, as we've discussed, there are a bunch of different perspectives within the isolationist perspective. There is the we should not get involved in foreign conflicts, no matter what perspective, because we need the money here at home, which means that you're also in favor of cutting spending by the government on a wide variety of other subjects. There's also an isolationism that suggests that whenever America gets involved in foreign conflicts, that tends to taint the United States, not it's about the United States tainting the rest of the world. But there is a theory that has now risen on the right that there is something deeply malign about the United States, something deeply wrong with the United States. Most people on the conservative side of the aisle tend to believe that America is a force for good in the world. And as we'll discuss, it turns out that dropping the atomic bomb on Japan was necessary for ending World War II and likely saved millions of lives, both American and Japanese. Why are we talking about how many lives it would save? It's just wrong to drop the bomb. Well, no, actually, if you end up saving more lives than are cost by the dropping of the atomic bomb, then it is morally justified to drop the atomic bomb. And that happens to be the reality of the situation. So
that's quite a hard argument to make, because then you'd have to sort of work out whether the sort of life of what the life versus life metric was, as if there could be a sort of a stock exchange of lives or a foreign exchange of life. This life is worth more than this life. I think once you're in the territory of dropping nuclear bombs, it's hard to make any moral argument. That's my personal position, which I'd happily, of course, pursue with Ben Shapiro. I've been on Ben's shows, and he's kindly ordained to be on this show. In this particular instance, I'm pretty, you know, I'm ardently against the use of nuclear missiles, and my perspective on isolationism is this. Subsidiarity. The closer power is to the people affected by it, the less likely it is there will be conflict of this scale. Because even though we, of course, have, as long as there have been people, there has been conflict, what we have an opportunity for now are new forms of confederacy, new forms of alliance, new forms of decentralization, new forms of anti-establishment politics that bakes in the idea that whilst you culturally run your community in this way, we run our community culturally in this way. And what you do over there is none of our business, and what we do over here is none of our business. And perhaps you might embed some what you might casually call universal principles around murder, violence, et al. Now let's have a look at the how the Oppenheimer argument and dilemma actually played out. What it was really created when Nagasaki and Hiroshima were bombed. Was it ultimately one of the most profitable industries the world has ever seen? Was this, in fact, the keystone of the military-industrial complex? Let's have a look. A 2022 report by Ira Heflin and International Physicians for the Prevention of Nuclear War estimated that a limited nuclear war between India and Pakistan that used roughly 3% of the world's 12,000-plus nuclear warheads would kill hundreds of thousands of millions, perhaps even billions of us. A full-scale nuclear war between the United States and Russia, the study suggests, could kill up to 5 billion people within 2 years, essentially ending life as we know it, or in a nuclear winter. Also largely ignored are the critical voices who argued that there was no need to drop a bomb. No less two of them on Japan, most of whose cities had already been devastated by US firebombing to end the war. Of course, I'm well aware that the British caused unimaginable incendiary damage to Dresden because of what was a retaliatory strike rather than a military one. And I believe that that was also wrong. Indeed, to have principles means, doesn't it, that you don't need to know who... Well, when you're discussing principles, I suppose, from a truly ethical position, you wouldn't need to know the character or nature of the individual. The principle would apply whether it was Britain bombing Dresden or America bombing Hiroshima or Russia bombing Ukraine. You would just say, well, I'm against that. It doesn't matter. I don't need to know which nations or individuals are involved. I have a principle around that. General Eisenhower wrote that when he was told by Secretary of War Henry Stinson of the plan to drop atomic bombs on populated areas in Japan, I voiced to him my grave misgivings, first on the basis of my belief that Japan was already defeated and that dropping the bomb was completely unnecessary. Okay, so I suppose the argument, according to Eisenhower, who's a president and a significant general, the idea that Japan would somehow galvanize an ongoing Second World War, by at least by his reckoning, is bogus. The film also fails to address, they're talking about Oppenheimer, the health impacts of the research, testing and production of such weaponry, which to this day is still causing disease and death, even without another nuclear weapon being used in war. Victims of nuclear weapons development include people who were impacted by the fallout from US nuclear testing in the Western United States and the Marshall Islands in the Western Pacific, uranium miners on the Navajo lands, and many others. Speaking of the first nuclear test in Los Alamos, New Mexico, Tina Cordova of the Tularosa Basin Downwinders Consortium, which represents that state's residents who suffered widespread cancers and high rates of infant mortality caused by radiation from that explosion, said, it's an inconvenient truth. People just don't want to reflect on the fact that American citizens were bombed at Trinity. Another crucially important issue has received almost no attention. Neither the film nor the discussion sparked by it has explored one of the most important reasons for the continued existence of nuclear weapons: the profits it yields the participants in America's massive nuclear industrial complex. Once Oppenheimer and other concerned scientists and policymakers failed to convince the Truman administration to simply close Los Alamos and place nuclear weapons and the materials needed to development under international control, the only way, as they saw it, to head off a nuclear arms race with the Soviet Union, the drive to expand the nuclear weapons complex was on. Research and production of nuclear warheads and nuclear-armed bombers, missiles and submarines quickly became a big nuisance, whose beneficiaries have worked doggedly to limit any efforts at the reduction or elimination of nuclear arms. According to nuclear expert Stephen Schwartz, author of Atomic Audit, the seminal work on the financing of US nuclear weapons programs through the end of 1945, the Manhattan Project cost nearly $38 billion in today's money while helping spawn an enterprise that since cost taxpayers an almost unimaginable $12 trillion for nuclear weapons and related programs. That's six Afghanistans worth of nuclear weapons when there's not even been a nuclear war. That's pretty crazy. And the cost never ends. Nobel Prize winning international campaign to abolish nuclear weapons reports that the US spent $43.7 billion on nuclear weapons last year alone, and a new Congressional Budget Office report suggests that another $756 billion will go into deadly armaments in the next decade. Private contractors now run the nuclear warhead complex and build nuclear delivery vehicles. They range from Raytheon, General Dynamics and Lockheed Martin to lesser known firms like BWX Technologies and Jacobs Engineering, all of which split billions of dollars in contracts from the Pentagon for the production of nuclear delivery vehicles and the Department of Energy for nuclear warheads. And such beneficiaries of the nuclear weapons industry are far from silent when it comes to debating the future of nuclear spending and policymaking. Northrop Grumman and its 12 major ICBM subcontractors have been busy pushing the Sentinel as well. They spend tens of millions of dollars on campaign contributions and lobbying
annually while employing former members of the government's nuclear establishment to make their case to Congress and the executive branch. So it seems pretty clear on that basis, that nuclear arms and nuclear armament is just another aspect of the military industrial complex. And the key beneficiaries of nuclear armaments and nuclear missiles and the industry that surrounds it is the same military industrial complex that appears to have undue, incredible influence over American political life, geopolitics, escalating wars across the world, endless conflicts, all funded by American taxpayers and taxpayers elsewhere. Surely the day must be at hand where we call ourselves to reason, where we awaken with ourselves that which is beyond reason, love, service, and the possibility of genuine change that is unlikely to be delivered to us through the conduits of bellicosity that we are currently affording perhaps a little too much time and space. Let us freely advocate for peace. Let us learn from Bishop Mari Emanuel that forgiveness, transparency, clarity, and love remain the answers. And in this spirit, I salute you and love you all. Now, we've got fantastic shows coming up. We've got Dr. Niels coming on the show tomorrow. You are going to love this guy. This is his book, The Indoctrinated Brain. He explains how the conditions are created to turn us all into conformists. It's a fantastic show. You don't want to miss it. He explains to us how through toxins, through lack of nutrition, neurological environments are created that make us malleable. He sort of finds the mesh between social nudging, B.F. Skinner style, and neurological control. You'll love it. Then on Friday's show, Colonel Douglas McGregor. Guys, you awaken wonders that were there for that. Wasn't that a glory to behold? I suggest you right now press the red button, join our locals community. You get early access to interviews. You get to join our book club where we're doing very well on Mere Christianity. I mean, it's working. I'm very, very close to Christianity right now. I'm on the precipice of a baptism, baby. I'm on the precipice of a baptism. We meditate every week and we do an exclusive video. This week, we're talking about fluoride and the stuff they put in the water. You will love it. So, tomorrow, Dr. Niels and conditioning and conformity. Friday, Colonel Douglas McGregor. I ask him this. Do you think that the military could ever turn? That the military could turn against the government and be for the people? I want to welcome all of our new members that saw that conversation live. Excuse me, a little earlier. Eugene, Rebel 5. I had too much coffee. Katie, that's someone's name, although I probably have had too much coffee. Katie 716 and Queen Checker. Join us tomorrow, not for more of the same, but for more of the different. Until then, if you can, stay free.
No, here's the fucking news.